Hi, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Canadian Podcow. My name's Andrew Campbell, and as always, joined with me, Sarah Sash. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Andrew. How's things in Ontario?
Well, as we're recording this intro right now, it is so hot. It would be really nice if we cut 10 degrees off the temperature right now. Is it quite as hot in BC?
No, not so much, but decent weather. We're looking at making some square bales, so that'd be good.
Which is nice. Now, you were actually in Ontario for some meetings earlier in the week. Did you love the Ontario heat wave?
I think I snuck out of there just before it got too carried away. But yeah, I am not used to humidity.
Well, it's one thing that, yeah, like we're definitely used to it. And like, I'm looking out from my office right now at the barn and the cows still look comfortable. But gosh, it'd be really nice if it just cooled down just a little bit. Everybody, cows and me, would be much happier.
It is interesting how much environment can play in peak milk performance, that's for sure. And so in this episode, Stephen Roche, an animal health researcher from Acer Consulting based in Guelph, Ontario, will have a discussion with Holger Schwichtenberg, a second-generation dairy farmer in the Eastern Fraser Valley of BC. He runs a dairy farm with his wife and three sons, milking 150 cows with a robotic system.
Holger's actively involved in environmental stewardship and has implemented various practices that improve soil health, biodiversity, and water management around his farm. In this episode, Holger's going to share his thoughts on the importance of environmental stewardship, his efforts to manage soil health, and his experience with the Environmental Farm Plan.
Looking forward to it. Here we go.
Okay, Holger, well, I'm excited to be able to have the chance to chat a little bit, understand your perspectives and learn a little bit from you in terms of how you do things, how you manage the land, the environment. It's been a series of talks we've had now with producers, with many other folks around Canada understanding this. So excited to have the chance to hear from you a little bit on this. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be able to help, Steve.
So let's start with getting to know you a little bit more. Tell me about where you're at, where you're sitting today, a little bit more about yourself in the context of farming, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, so my name is Holger Schwichtenberg. I'm a dairy farmer in the Eastern Fraser Valley, just east of Vancouver. I farm here with my wife. We have three boys, Alex, Philip, and Mark. We have two full-time employees. We farm 210 acres in total, and we milk 150 cows with three D-Lavelle robots. The farm has been here since 1960. I'm the second generation farmer. The next generation, we're still waiting to see. There's an opportunity there, but not an obligation. And I have two siblings who are quite involved with the environmental movement and try and do things correctly. So yeah, we're a good team, and we, you know, we're not perfect, but we try to do the best we can. And when you're farming, a lot of time wind and weather plays a role, so you have to roll with the punches. But we do our best.
So you've already sort of introduced it a little bit. You know, we initially got together to talk about many things, but one of them being sort of the ProAction Environment module, which as of 2021 has sort of come live, and Canadian dairy farmers are going through the process of meeting those requirements, having conversations about those requirements. And we know that broadly it's meant to try and demonstrate value dairy farmers already place and have placed for a long time on environmental health. When I say environmental stewardship, what comes to mind to you, Holger, as a farmer in your particular area of the country?
Well, I think for me, environmental stewardship, there's a lot of things that you can do, but I think it's the awareness. As a producer, I was just looking through my environmental farm plan this morning, and environmental stewardship is everything from chemical storage to petroleum storage, what to do, do you have emergency phone numbers in place, all the way to a nutrient application to your land, right place, right amount, right time, that you have adequate storage, that for me, it's the awareness. And again, I mentioned earlier, we're not perfect, but we try and do the best we can. And I think it's also smart business. It's good advertising for our industry with the public, what we're doing, what we're trying to do, and that we are aware of how we should be farming.
What are some of the things that you've done on your farm in particular that have helped you to sort of steward or look after the environment?
Well, probably one of the biggest thing was 6 years ago was putting up a second storage container, a slurry store with 650,000 gallons. We already had a concrete in-ground manure storage with a roof that held 750. But depending on the weather, We have a no spreading zone here in BC, November, December, and January. And based on the weather and et cetera, the 750, it got a bit tight at times. And as chair of the BCDA, you need to lead by example and take responsibility. So we kind of looked at our situation and said, we really don't have enough storage if things go a little sideways. So I think that's probably our biggest addition. The other one as well is sitting down with our environmental farm planner here in this province and coming up with a nutrient management plan. How many cows we have, how many replacements we have, how much land do we have? Are we spreading it at the right time? Are we draglining it? Are we tanking it? Just the whole awareness of treating it much more. Yeah, it's a nutrient, not a waste. And I think that shift has been very important. I mean, it's been 25 years, but just the awareness of what you have. And of course, increasing fertilizer prices makes you realize just what you have, it has value.
You talked about your EFP. Now, the EFP itself has been sort of adopted by not just dairy farmers, but by most livestock agricultural commodities in Canada as an important resource and opportunity to sort of figure out and strategize and tailor management to risks on your property or around in your environment. Every province seems to take a slightly different approach in terms of the opportunities farmers have to get it done versus online, sitting down with an advisor and so on. Talk to me about your experience in doing your EFP. You mentioned it's been some time since you've initially developed one, and you mentioned the use of an advisor. So what does that look like in your neck of the woods?
So in our neck of the woods, we have an ex-dairy farmer called Dave Melnichuk, and he did our original EFP. I think it was probably about 12 years ago already. We needed to complete the EFP to apply for some funding for a roof on the manure pit. And Dave is very knowledgeable. Dave knows the dairy industry. And we sat in front of our house and we had a couple beer and we flipped through the environmental farm plan and we filled it out together. And it was a very positive experience. And I like the fact that I have a personal relationship with Dave, and we discussed things, he analyzed, he explained, and it was not an onerous, you were doing everything wrong kind of a conversation. It was just, this is what we need to work on. These are your strengths. These are your weaknesses. Were you even aware of this? No, I wasn't. So it was very much a conversation, and I found it quite enlightening. And I also would like to point out that since September 2021, when the environmental pillar was became mandatory for ProAction, every dairy farm in BC by September this year should have an EFP. And I've actually heard very little pushback, that there's not sort of, they're not upset, they're recognizing that there are limitations, that there's only so many EFPs and you have to get in the line, in the queue, but it hasn't been this big hurdle that some people had anticipated. Well, this is anecdotal experience from my part, but it has not been a big negative experience like some people feared.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Thinking of your experience, anything in particular surprise you? Maybe a risk you hadn't considered as being part of this, something that you thought maybe you were strong on that turned out to be an area for improvement?
I think for us, the one is that, we are farming actually a little more than 210 acres, but if you have your 300 mature cow equivalents, that our farm, we're okay, but we're close as far as, plant nutrient uptake, the amount of land we use for corn, that we have to pay attention. We're not free and clear. We don't have excessive land. And I think the other thing that we found beneficial is the whole idea of when to spread. Are there any water courses? Are there, what can you do to, setbacks? What can some of your neighbors do? I just think for myself, it's this whole awareness or much more, actually the numbers, how much manure and urine does a cow produce in a day? I know those numbers now. So it was just a very positive learning experience of what we can do. And that when you talk about the environment, it should be almost roll off your tongue the way production per cow or feed costs per cow. It should become part of your everyday conversation.
Yeah, I think that's a nice way to look at it. Have you seen other benefits as a result of completing your EFP? Has it just been more of a guideline, something to refer back to, or have there been other benefits from, say, even that conversation you had?
I think just from the conversation that we had, is that if you ever do have a chemical spill or if you do have a petroleum spill, that you actually have a phone number ready to go, that, you know, that's something we never had before. Are you paying attention to the runoff from the bunker silo? What's happening with that? You know, you make sure that you harvest the right dry matter content so you have no excessive fluid running off your bunker. We found out that certain parts of the country, they've got nothing to do with their silo plastic on their bunker silo. We have a recycling program in our community. Other communities, you find out that there's no recycling and actually the local landfill won't even take it. They're almost forced to burn or bury it, which is really what you don't want to do. Even, for example, carcass disposal. We have people here in our valley that pick it up. Other parts of the country, you're on your own. So maybe that we are spoiled a bit. But for me, it also showed that we're not all singing from the same song sheet when it comes to environmental concerns. Or what's important to us is, for example, Saskatchewan, they have much, you know, you have a 3-year program, I believe, as far as when and where you can spread manure. Manitoba's got some very stringent rules. New Brunswick has practically none, but we're all one industry. So I think you have to keep that in mind, that we're not all equal.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And the challenges, environmental and otherwise, that come up in different areas of the country are very unique in some cases too. I mean, from water courses running through your land, like you said, to environmental pressures and competition for land, all of those things. Here in Ontario, where I sit today, I mean, geez, the amount of rural land that is being sort of, let's call it just urban encroachment, right? Even just understanding the impacts of all of those things that are outside of a farmer's control, but impact ultimately how we manage and expectations as the public gets closer to rural land is an interesting conversation, to say the least. As we sort of switch gears a little bit, a major focus when we think typically, I'd say, about environmental management is soil health. It's something that's a core component of the environment questionnaire and the environmental farm plan in terms of, you know, how do we actually address compaction, erosion? How do we build soil carbon? We hear for years now about zero or minimum tillage, cover cropping, many other soil health practices too. If I just asked you the question, Holger, how do you manage soil health on your farm? What comes to mind as sort of key practices that you've either done for some time or maybe something you've maybe changed your approach on more recently?
Well, the one thing that myself and most other dairy farms in the Fraser Valley have done is pay much more attention to the cover crop component and how best to manage that. For example, our farm, we grow corn now with slightly less heat units so that we can harvest somewhat earlier in the fall to make sure that you actually get your cover crop in the ground. That is actually the healthy stand when you go into the winter, and that by the time next spring rolls around, that you actually have a crop to harvest before you plant your next corn crop. And I think that, never mind keeping the soil matter on your land from wind and water erosion, but you also have another whole crop to work with. So we actually have an established cover crop that when we harvest the corn in the fall, we can actually legitimately spread manure because there's actually a growing crop left over after the corn has been harvested. And there's been and we're part of a Living Labs component to that, where they're actually doing research on that. How does it work? Again, last year it wasn't as successful as 2 years ago because there simply wasn't any moisture. We've solved that because we've installed an irrigation system. But I think for a lot of farmers, that whole cover crop component of it, you know, increasing your feed production, especially with the tremendous cost increases for your grains and stuff that we have to import into BC, that you can grow as many of your forages are homegrown versus purchasing is for us is very important to the bottom line. So cover cropping, and also paying much more attention to the people that are doing the drag lining. How are they doing it? How much are they adding? Are they careful? Are they leaving large puddles in the middle of the field? Yeah, just this whole awareness and paying attention to that, it's not just off the side of your desk. This is an important part of your farming operation, and you need to pay attention to it.
You mentioned an important piece there that I've been chatting with other farmers about around irrigation, and specifically irrigation being the important piece, but water management, water conservation, water usage. Has that been a focal point for, I don't know if you can speak about this from the BC context, because just given that you're on the coast, I don't know if there's more interest there, but at minimum, just trying to think about water use efficiency, what does that sort of look like for you in context of your farm?
Well, and to put it bluntly, in the, for the last 6 years, it, historically in the Fraser Valley, you get five cuts. And the first two cuts have been good, solid, and three, four, and five have been pretty much non-existent. And going over to the corn for a minute, we used to, let's say, conservatively harvest 23, 24, 25 tons of corn per acre. Some of these other years, we've been 16 and 17. Input costs remain the same, but because of lack of moisture, you're not getting the tonnage. So a farm such as ours, with the decreased tonnage with the corn and third, fourth, and fifth crop not really yielding much at all without irrigation, the margins just aren't there to keep farming like we were. So this whole water management becoming part of the irrigation team it's been non-negotiable. We've had to do it at the rate we are going. We can't keep paying those kind of feed costs for imported alfalfa. So yeah, now, and of course we have the irrigation reel. Is it the most efficient delivery system for water? No, but right now it's all we could afford to do. And our land, you know, pivot irrigation, or, you know, we're just not set up for it. So it's been, again, a new learning curve. If someone would have told me 25 years ago, Holger, you're going to need irrigation in the Fraser Valley, I would have laughed them off the table. And here we are, eating humble pie, going to the bank, borrowing another $300,000 and installing an irrigation system because we have to. And I'm not the only one. I think the smartest people right now in the Fraser Valley are the ones that have irrigation systems for sale, because we're not the only ones in this boat.
Yeah, no, and I'm sure that's true outside of dairy as well. If we think about another important topic that is, I think, coming to the fore more and more these days is biodiversity. How do we manage it? How do we conserve it? How do we protect it? Any sense on, I guess, first off, what kind of practices you have put in place around biodiversity, or maybe didn't directly put them in for biodiversity, but have that indirect benefit of sort of conserving or managing or protecting the wildlife, essentially all living things in the area that you are farming?
So I say the biggest thing that we've done on our farm, we've planted hundreds of trees. And if you ever come for a visit, Steve, it's probably the first thing you'll notice. Yeah, we've got, you know, trees separating fields. We've got trees around our house. We have trees around our buildings. There's bird boxes up. There's actually an acre and a half in the far corner. Years ago, there was a hop drying barn there. You can't plow it. There's gravel and concrete in the ground. So we just planted an acre and a half of trees. And so I think that's been the biggest one. And then we also have a slough at the back of our property. There's been riparian plantings there of cottonwood and cedar. And it looks a bit wild, but I think for biodiversity, that's what they're looking for. And I think the other thing, what I try and encourage, people always seem to think the word swamp is another name for a useless piece of land. And I think that, hold on a minute, swamps, you know, they soak up a lot of moisture, they store a lot of moisture, there's a lot of biodiversity. They're an integral part of our system. And this whole idea of, yeah, we got to drain the swamp, I think hopefully that idea or that, you know, that prospect is that people will appreciate what the swamp is. There is low-lying land. There is value there. And it also, again, you know, in our connection with the consumer, I think it's valuable that you have that on your property. And then rather than plowing it up and filling it in, that there's value to having that swamp, that wetland on your property. So I think, again, the whole awareness of what we can do, and it's a great story that you can have a dairy farm, you know, producing high quality milk right next to a riparian zone or a swamp, or by it, yeah, it's mutually compatible. They shouldn't exclude each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, in areas like mine, where you hear a lot of talk about stormwater management and what do we do with excess water as and when that comes, and speaking with you specifically, given where you're at, it makes me think of, I guess, two things. One is what happens when we have extreme weather events and how we manage those, and wetlands can be an important area there as they can take on moisture that the rest of the land can't. And thinking about what's gone on in terms of flooding in the valley in some cases, and the EFP, or more broadly, the environment module, asking us to think about how do we manage not just when times are good or how we plan to, but in times of emergency or unexpected situations anyway. So balling that all up, has that been a major influence on you, Holger, or other farmers certainly in the valley in terms of environmental stewardship or even just perspective on preparing for the next go round when this may happen again?
Again, I've probably used the word already 8 times, but it's the awareness that there are some things that you can do on the land. Are there low-lying areas where the water can go if there is too much of it? Do you have setbacks? Are you prepared with your own farm? What can you do? What have you done? Do you need, you know, do you need to berm something up? How high are your buildings off the floodplain? Again, just thinking about these things that we're not immune to it. That this heat dome, this phenomenal heat dome that we had 2 years ago, where we were warmer than Abu Dhabi. Think about that. That we have to now have heat mitigation for up to 45 degrees. Again, 25 years ago, no one ever thought that was possible. And here we are. And if you take a look at the long-range weather forecast for the Fraser Valley, we're yet ready for another year of no rain. So again, if I wouldn't have put my irrigation in for this year, I'd be facing the same situation as last year. So, and I think that a lot of the dairy farmers are becoming aware of the change in the climate, the change in the weather, more water in the shoulder seasons. Where does it go? What do we do with it? And then the fact that there's very little of it in the summer months. So is it time to start thinking about people having retention ponds or community retention ponds or something that, you know, you have the water there when you need it, not in the fall where it gets in the way or keeps your land flooded.
It's amazing how much evolution we've seen, isn't it? In both the weather in and of itself, practice, the world in general, how much has changed, but in how much you need to adapt and how much you need to respond, whether it's environment, animal care, traceability, whatever, it's amazing how much evolution has taken place and will need to continue to take place to be resilient and sustainable. Is that fair to say?
Yes. And I think too that the public, you know, appreciates that locally produced food, you know, food sovereignty, we're not dependent on other countries for feeding us, but there's also an appreciation for your local producer, not just dairy, of the costs that are incurred by these infrastructure changes that are needed. And probably I don't need to tell you this, but, you know, right now dairy farming is razor thin in our province. I'm very, very thankful my wife has a well-paying off-farm job right now and that we can continue. So I think it's that the public is aware that the changes we're making are not without costs, not without investment. So to keep that in mind, that it's not all for free.
Absolutely. No, that's right. And you see those ripple effects are being realized all over the country in a whole different set of sectors outside of just food, but food in particular. And so I think that you're right. That's important, especially when it comes to expectations of the supply chain and what's mm-hmm. happening at any sort of primary input developer. So I think that's well said. Holger, it's been a pleasure to have the chance to sort of sit down with you, unpack a few of these things and think about your experiences, where you've been, where you're at today and where you might go and certainly where others are going as well in the Canadian dairy industry. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, I'm glad to share my experiences and I hope it helped. I encourage other dairy farmers to embrace it and see what they can do with it and where it takes them.
Meet a Canadian dairy farmer. Planting one tree, then hundreds more, to naturally purify the air. Preserving wildflowers for pollinators, and nurturing wetlands for healthier soil. So wildlife can prosper.
Biodiversity is in our nature.
Working towards a sustainable future. That's Dairy Farming Forward.
We're in!
So no pun intended, Andrew, but we covered a lot of ground today, from the importance of the EFP in identifying areas for improvement on the farm, to innovative ways to manage soil health and nutrient application, water management strategies. We've got it all in there. So there's lots of things to consider as we prepare and adapt to new environmental challenges.
I'm sorry, you said no pun intended. We've covered a lot of ground. You absolutely intended that pun. You had to have Sarah. But I think Holger really does drive home the point that every bit of land can contribute to a healthier ecosystem. His perspective on really the value of wetlands, I think, is something that many farmers can benefit from, recognizing what their role just is in that water management and wildlife habitat when you have it.
Yeah, for me, one of the key takeaways from the conversation is that sustainable farming practices, while they can require significant investment and effort, offer such substantial long-term benefits. They help preserve natural resources, enhance farm resilience, and promote biodiversity, all of which are crucial as we face growing environmental pressures. And Holger's farm is sure committed to taking on a lot of these things.
Before we do wrap up, I do want to thank Holger for sharing his journey and insights with us. And a big thanks, obviously, to Stephen as well for driving the conversation as part of the Dairy Farmers of Canada's Pro Action podcast series, which is partly funded by the Canadian Agricultural Partnership.
And we would be remiss not to thank our production team, Carl Belanger and Bruce Sargent, as always, and to Aaron Winans and Carly Wright for their technical support. We'll catch you soon on another episode of the Canadian Podcast.